Welcome to Wildlife Outdoors with your host, Russell and Jose. If you have a passion for conservation of the outdoors, or you're enjoying a calming hike in the mountains, an exhilarating kayak trip on the river, feeling a fish on the end of your line, cooking on an open flame in a primitive campsite, or stalking big game, just waiting for the perfect shot, you're in the right place. So put on your boots and polarized sunglasses and come along for the ride.
All right, everybody. Hello. Welcome back to the Wildlife Outdoors podcast with Russell and Jose. Today, we're going to be going kind of briefly touching back on the topic from the previous podcast, which is touching on the National Outdoor
National Great Outdoors Month. Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Totally butchered that, but cool. Man, we are joined today by my good friend, Theo. Theo and I have met, we've met a few years ago, and he recently moved to Georgia. Well, I say recently, a couple months ago. But he's an avid outdoorsman, and today he'll be joining us and kind of giving his take on how he enjoys getting outside and how he would probably enjoy the Great Outdoors Month. Theo, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Would you like to give our listeners a bit more of a background as to who you are?
Sure. Hello, my name is Theo. I am a pretty avid, like, outdoors person. Like, anytime I can either talk or be outdoors, I'm, like, there. You know, if you could pay me to get my hands dirty, that would be my job. I currently reside in Georgia. I work for the Great REI Co-op. Been working there for 9 months and love it. I kind of do a bit of development and marketing with them alongside with working in the store and helping your friends get sized in their boots and their backpacks for camping.
Nice.
Awesome. So camping is kind of your thing, I'm assuming?
Yeah. I'm like, if I can get outside and like kind of be in a space outside, I'm there. You don't even have to chat. Like, I always tell Jose, we always talk about like trips and things like that. And I'm like, I'm so glad that he has like, he has a bit of restraint because it's only a word.
So with your career with REI, what made you want to work for REI?
I've always wanted to be in a space where I felt like I had most like community. I'm really passionate about, like, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, you hear growing up, especially being a person of color, you know, you think, oh, we don't belong outdoors. Like, what are you doing outside? And, you know, things like that. And I really found a lot of healing and a lot of just great movement in my life while being in the outdoors, and kind of just was like, I'm sticking with this because it makes me feel less anxiety. It makes me feel like I'm growing. I feel like I can hear clearly and I can make a decision clearly when I'm in this space. And, you know, kind of going alongside with REI, since being at REI, I really felt like I had a lot of first. I was able to do things in a retail space that I don't think a lot of people who look like me have been able to do. I joke and say I was America's next REI model, you know? I got to be in a catalog and in a campaign for REI. I'm surprised I haven't had friends just be like, oh, I saw you in our REI emails.
Right.
You know, right. Things like that. So like, that was like a pretty big thing for me because, you know, I've been through a lot in my life, you know, and just being there, the people that I work with, they kind of like, we make time for each other. And you don't really see a lot of that in retail. It's kind of just like the woes of life. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is a job, but we kind of find community together and we do a lot of things for the betterment of the outdoors.
That's awesome. So you mentioned that, you know, obviously you're a person of color, and you said that not very many people that look like you are doing what you're doing, working where you're working.
Like, for example, a lot of our stores, like one of the stores in Georgia is in Alpharetta, which is like, you know, the houses are very, very like expensive in the area. They're almost like a million, like, and higher, you know. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times in our calls for our, like, we have inclusion network meetings and we have events and stuff that we do virtually. And you hear a lot about, you know, our Black and brown family not being heard or like not being represented well, and or just like, you know, someone giving advice. Like, for example, like, I've been in the store and I can pretty much tell you what type of shoe. I can look at your foot and look at how you're walking and know, like, hey, this shoe is not for you. Like, you know, I can give you some pretty good advice on, like, you know, clothing, or like if you're going somewhere, how much, you know, what would be the type of material. We go through a lot of training, as even on top of like our own personal experience, we go through a lot of training.
I see.
In the co-op, and there's a lot of, like, I would say, doubt and like neglect of understanding that my culture or my like skin color doesn't stop my ability to give you sound advice. And I think being in that experience and like experiencing it, like having someone giving someone advice and then they kind of like they kind of ignore you and they're like, go ask someone else, and they tell them the same thing, and it's like the best advice that they've received. It's kind of like, okay, you know, maybe my resources aren't white here, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy. I never even thought about, you know, the prejudgment that would happen on retail employees based on that. That's crazy to me. But REI seems like it's trying to, you know, keep a diversity in the workplace, which is awesome.
Yeah. And not even only with race, but even age, like, I love the build. Like, I love the fact that we have older people that work in our stores, because, you know, we have a guy, he's like older. He's like our version of Chuck Norris, and he crew hiked the AT. And I'm like, man, like, man, I've done like the rim to rim. I was like, man, one day, like, I'll share that goal with you, you know, that accomplishment.
So the AT, I'm assuming, is the Appalachian Trail.
Yes, yes. We're right above Tennessee.
Dang, that's pretty impressive. Yeah.
That's a hell of a task.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I dated a girl one time that her cousin did it, and he said he wasn't going to shave the whole time that he did it. And he went in, you know, this tall, lanky, you know, fresh cut guy. And when he got done, he looked like a full out mountain man. His hair was almost down to his shoulders. He had this full beard. And I mean, he did it rough. And he was also a fellow photographer, and some of the pictures that he took were phenomenal. And some of the stuff that I'd seen, and, you know, wildlife and flowers and mountain ranges. I mean, it was just crazy, some of the stuff. And he took it to the next level. Once he got off that, he took about 6 months going back to work. And then he decided he was going to hike from the northern tip of New Zealand to the southern tip of New Zealand. And that trip looked amazing when he got back. And some of the water over there in New Zealand is crystal clear. And like, there was times where he would take a selfie underneath the water with a GoPro or something, and you could tell he was underwater because his hair and bubbles, but just the clarity was phenomenal. And so I would like to go to New Zealand just because of his trip that he took over there. But it's crazy that, you know, people would actually, I don't think I could hike the Appalachian Trail. I personally don't think I could. It would be an amazing experience. I just don't think I could.
It's a lot. And like, that's like one of the things that, like, if you ever go into REI, you'll like, if you ever look at someone's tag or their name tag, like our name tags have our name, but they also have like a, it has like a landmark or a place, you know, like a park or things like that. And you'll like, if you ever get a chance to, I would ask somebody like, oh, why did you like, what is that place? Where is it at? And why did you pick that place? Because it's a place, it's a specific place that's important to them.
I see. That's awesome. I never noticed that, which, I mean, I've only been to an REI once, but that's awesome.
Is there a place that's like important to you, Theo?
So whenever I got hired, mine was the Guadalupe Mountains. Like, I know y'all are from the Texas, Arkansas area, so y'all kind of know what we're talking about, but I have a lot of people
that just talked about them in a previous podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like a lot of people here in Georgia, they probably know of it, not only a national park, but it's next to Carlsbad Canyons where the bat show is. Like, you know, they kind of have the bats that come out.
Really? Is that kind of like the free-tailed bats in Austin? Is it?
Yeah. So it's like it's in the west part of Texas. So, Guadalupe Mountains is in Salt Flat, Texas. And then Guadalupe Mountains is not too far from Carlsbad.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always wanted to go and, go to the Guadalupe National Mountains. I didn't know anything about the caverns though, but I've always wanted to see bat shows like in caves and stuff. Cause I've seen the bats fly from under the bridge in Austin. And I mean, that's a sight to see, but I'd love to see it more in like a cave setting. Like, I just feel like that would be eerie, but awesome at the same time.
If you want to see bats coming out of a cave, you need to go to the Brackenridge Caves.
Where's that at?
It is the Bracken Cave Preserve. It's in San Antonio, or less than 20 miles from downtown San Antonio. It is home to the largest bat colony in the world. Over 20 million Mexican free-tailed bats and they come out like every night to feed, dude. It is amazing. And there's actually a really cool short film about it on the, I think it's a Wild Texas Film Tour. They used to do these like a mini film festival, if you will, all wildlife and like ecology based. And they did a short film about it. And it's really, really cool, man. And I think they talk about it in the film.
I think I know what film you're talking about. I want to see it. I think I have it on my list.
Dude, it is amazing. Like both of you being like photographers and like photography enthusiasts, I think, and then having dabbled a little bit in cinematography, I think y'all would really dig it, man. That film is phenomenal. Like, really well done. Yeah. Cinematography is amazing.
Is that the film that covers like the ocelots and stuff like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called.
I'm looking it up right now.
So in one of our previous episodes, Theo, me and Jose had talked about, the Guadalupe Mountains and the fact that there's actually a native cutthroat trout that is indigenous to Texas. And so that's what we'd previously talked about. And I just thought it was pretty interesting. So that's the place that is on your badge for REI, or do you have a badge?
So yeah, that is the place that's on my badge for REI. It was the last place that I went hiking and camping in Texas before I moved.
I see. That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah.
Was there a place you wanted to go hiking or camping in Texas before you moved that you didn't get the chance to go?
So in like my years of living in Texas, I hate to say this out loud, but like I've never been a Big Bend, but I would love, like, that's like one of my like places that I want to go. I've been everywhere around like the States, but like Big Bend is like the like place that I've kind of like, oh, I haven't been there yet.
That's the same for us.
Yeah, we've been talking about going to Big Bend, especially trying to get photos of the wildflowers when they bloom. Mm-hmm. But we've never made that trip.
Yeah. And we both want to try to go close to a new moon so we can get some good astrophotography and try to make double photography trip out of it, nighttime and daytime.
Definitely help you with that, because I've done I've done a little bit of astrophotography, like back when I was like, because I have mirrorless, so it's like a little bit easier to do stuff like that. And
oh, for sure.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun, especially in Austin. Austin is such a great place to get that kind of stuff done, especially like Travis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The amount of stars, I used to go camping quite a bit at Paleface Park or Pace Bend Park, I think is what it's called now. Mm-hmm. And used to go out there to Pace Bend, and you can see crazy amounts of stars. I remember one time I went camping out there, must have been probably 2013. And I don't remember what meteor shower it was. But maybe the Orionid meteor shower.
Yeah, it was Orion. Out there. Yeah, yeah.
And it was crazy, just the amount of you know, comets you could see and asteroids you could see going through. And I just laid in the bed of my truck right there. And so I was at the primitive campsites, and then the lake was pretty low at that time. That was when Texas was heavy in a drought. I think Lake Travis was 60 or 80 feet low. And so you could drive down to what used to be lake bottom, and it was basically a sandy beach. And you couldn't jump off the cliffs that, you know, everybody knows over there at Pace Bend. You couldn't jump off anything because the lake was so low. But you could drive down and be on the sandy beach. And I just drove right down there, backed my truck up to the lake, and just laid there and watched, you know, the meteor shower for probably a little longer than I should have. But it was a great time. But I wish I would have had, like, I wasn't as big into photography back then, so I didn't have a get up or anything. And but that would have been awesome to be able to get.
That's awesome.
So it sounds like we need to make a trip.
Oh,
look, yeah, hands down. Let me know. I'll use those vacation days.
Yeah, we got to plan something out.
We do for sure.
Heck yeah.
We, me and Jose went and did a trip on the Buffalo National River up here in Arkansas. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. And when we did that, it was close to a new moon, and we did some astrophotography, and that was the first time that I ever did. And he has a mirrorless, and I have my Nikon D750, and it was just crazy, just the amount of things he could do with his camera compared to mine.
Yeah.
And the battery length, you know, the battery life of his camera was much longer than mine. And I wanted to do long exposure time lapse. And so I was able to do 240. I think I had it on a 10-second exposure, 15-second exposure. Mm-hmm. And took 240 pictures. So. And I got this nice little clip. It was a time lapse of, you could see the Milky Way, and the Milky Way was shifting. And then you could randomly see airplanes flying through because there's an airport in the distance. And so it was pretty cool. And then the clouds come rolling in over the mountains, and it was awesome, but it's like a 3-second clip. And if I had more battery, I definitely would have been able to get a longer one. So.
Dude, that's awesome. That's so awesome. I know you and Jose probably talk a lot about photography. I definitely started in another genre of photography, but like my boy, he like really sparked something in me. I was like, I'm usually like a very like technical hiker and camper. I really don't want to bring things that like will bring more weight, mm-hmm. but you know, the Instagram don't lie, and seeing his stuff, I was like, man, I want to take more photos and take more photos outdoors. And I think I try to be pretty intentional with like my time outdoors. It's a very intimate thing for me, mm-hmm. and it's a thing of therapy. So like I used to like bring my camera out, and I would like really like be, I noticed that I would get like really technical about it, and like I would want to plan out a shoot. But then I'll kind of like one of the things that I even shared with Jose, I went to Colorado like a couple years ago, and I literally only bought two disposable cameras. And with those disposable cameras, like I had like maybe 32 spaces in exposures to use.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that was so funny about that trip is that none of the, like, I think like two shots, like out of all of those exposures were able to be developed because the last day of the trip, it hailed and rained so bad. So when I got the photos back, like they were all like black, but yeah, but like, I mean, Yeah, I was able to color. The couple of photos that I did get, they were able to be like color corrected. Mm-hmm. I color corrected a bit of them in Lightroom, and it was just like this moment of like, it made me think about like when we go outdoors, we really are there to like, we are the, what my friend says, we're the supporting actor.
Right. The star of the show is definitely the nature.
Yeah, exactly. We are the supporting actor.
And I remember when you, I think you sent me those photos.
I did.
I was just like, dude, this looks, yeah. I was like, this looks freaking awesome. The landscape was beautiful, but, and the compositions, if, I mean, granted, it's been a while since I've seen those photos, but if I remember correctly, those compositions, like, they were, I mean, there's like, I don't know how to explain it. They're just beautifully done. And then with the film, like the film just imparts like a special, I don't know, feel to the image. And it's just, I mean, it was just like beautiful, man. I felt it can almost feel this might sound strange, but you can almost feel like the emotion through the photo, yeah. At least for me, like it was, or maybe it just triggered my own emotion, whatever, but it
was the nostalgia.
Like yeah. I really, yes. Yeah. There we go. That's a good way.
That is very, it was beautiful. That is definitely my like MO. Like I want you to, whenever I take a photo, if I take a photo of something, I want you to feel something. I want you to be like, man, I think he was trying to say this. Even if I wasn't saying that, I want you to have that emotion and that like that trigger of thought, you know, like I don't like usually even so I kind of like my background is in food and I've done portrait, but food and product photography. And one of the things that was just so funny whenever I would like take photos for these restaurants and companies is that they would say like this perspective. I've never thought about it. Like I'm looking at this photo and it looks like I'm looking head first into this, but it doesn't look trashy. It looks really good. Like, and I'm like, perspective is just the thing that we all have different eye points and viewpoints, you know, and it's about like understanding where we see the same. But yeah, that was a really hard thing for me because I know like Russell, like I'm very much like, I want to see the shot after it was taken. So I got to make sure I got like the right focus. Everything is in focus that I want in focus. But it was just like, that's not the name of the game. It wasn't the point of the trips. Where like there to be like an intimate setting of like being with my brothers, you know, my friends,
right,
you know, things like that.
For sure. And have you ever seen The Secret Life of Walter Mitty?
Yes.
All right, so it's like one of my favorite films. But there's a scene like at the end where he was like trying to track down this photographer because
the skateboarding scene.
Well, the skateboarding scene was good, but the one that I was going to just kind of say, because it kind of like hearing you talk about it reminded me of this particular scene. There's a scene where Walter's like tracking down this photographer and he finds him on like this bridge on the Himalayas or whatever it was, whatever mountain range it was. And the photographer's trying to get a picture of a snow leopard. And so they're just there talking, whatever. And the snow leopard comes out and the photographer doesn't even do anything. Like he's just looking at it through his camera. And Walter just asks him, like, aren't you going to take the photo? And the guy, I'm going to butcher it, but I'm going to paraphrase. He's like, you know, like moments like these, like I would want just for me to like be in the moment,
yeah,
to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to have the distraction of the camera. And so I totally get what you're saying. And cause like for me, like I love taking like outdoor related photography, landscapes, wildlife, you know, when we go hunting and fishing, stuff like that, I'd love to do it. But at the same time, I struggle with it because like you, photography, well, like you, the outdoors is a way for me to kind of escape that. And the camera adds another element to that. And in some ways it's distracting, but in another sense, it helps to kind of like capture those moments that you can, you know, revisit. and and hopefully, like you, like also, like you said, like capture those like emotions and things that you experienced in that time, and you can hopefully relive those moments while, you know, you're looking through your photos or whatever. And like Russell and I, when we went to the Buffalo National River, we took our cameras, we took them fishing and all that stuff. And like even now, months after, like I'll sometimes scroll through my library and I'll see those photos. And like, damn, like, that was just like so awesome. Like, and it makes you feel good. It makes you want to get back out and, you know, go, or makes me want to plan for the next adventure. You know, it's a double-edged sword sometimes.
But, it is. Yeah. The way that I see it is I try to live in the moment. And so I'll take it in for a while, but I always want to capture that moment because photos don't go away. Your memories do. Your memories will fade. And I try to find a happy medium between the two, to, you know, where I'm still taking in the moment and spending it with the people that I'm with, but I also want to capture that emotion that I'm feeling and be able to look back on it when I'm 80 years old and losing my mind and telling stories to my grandkids and great grandkids in the middle of the living room. So it's like I kind of live in both worlds, and I try to find a happy medium, which is very difficult to do. But same thing, I'll be scrolling through pictures, and it's like I posted today or yesterday a post of my oldest daughter when I taught her to fly fish for the first time, and she caught over 100 fish in 24 hours. And just seeing her face light up, and we were staying at a KOA campsite. And they had a pool there, and my youngest wanted to go swimming in the pool, and my oldest literally said, no, I want to stay here and fish. And she just stayed out there and just kept fishing, and every time she catch a fish, I'd hear her yell from across the park that she caught another one. And it was just, you know, I remember the feeling of being there, but it faded. And all these other experiences that I've had with my kids since then have kind of covered that up until I saw that post again. It's been 2 years, and I was like, and I forgot how I felt while I was out there. And so that's one thing that kind of reminds me, like, I'm glad that I'm living in the moment, but I'm also glad that I'm taking these pictures, because it just brings back those feelings that you had when you were there in that moment, and then you can relive them over and over. Yeah. So
I think of it from the perspective of, like, you know, I love music, and one of the things that made me think about what I thought about something that you said, you know, all three of us are artists in some way or form. When you produce art, you're creating, and it's a very intimate setting and it's an intimate space. I definitely think that there is this moment whenever we put that into the universe, like that, whatever thing we created, once we give it to other people, it's not ours anymore. Like, it's something that we created and we have a part in that journey, but it kind of becomes something where people can kind of like use it to navigate and to tell their story, kind of like a song. You know, songwriters that have written songs for, you know, themselves, people can kind of take those same songs and like use them to help them get through moments of their life, good and bad, you know, Willie Nelson, you know, things like that.
Art is very,
that's a good point.
Therapeutic in all ways, in all aspects of art, whether it be music, photography, painting. It's a way to get your emotions out.
Yeah. But not just the creation, but like the consumption of it, you know, like being able to appreciate someone else's work and everything, especially if you're a photographer or whatever, if you're someone who engages in that medium, whatever it may be. But if you can like look at someone else's work and you can acknowledge like the effort that went into that, and then also like your own interpretation of whatever it is that we're trying to convey, you know, it can be very therapeutic in that way. Also inspiring in a lot of ways.
Oh, for sure. Inspiring on both ways, for both the creator and the person that's taking it in, because as a photographer, as somebody that has put some work out, when somebody recognizes what I was trying to get across or what I was trying to do, and they recognize it and tell me it, it's therapeutic for me, and I'm sure, you know, it's therapeutic for them. And there's a recognition on both sides of it that creates this, you know, as Theo was saying, like this intimacy in that moment. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Man. I feel like we can do a whole another podcast on just talking about photography.
Dude, we should. We should. That's something we should definitely do in the future.
Dude, yeah, that's awesome.
So getting back to the subject that we were talking about, we had had a person that me and Jose grew up with over in Central Texas reached out to our podcast and was basically asking for ways to help get his sons into the outdoors. They're both young. And so he had messaged and thank you. His name's Blazin Florendo. And he reached out asking some questions, saying that he appreciates our podcast and that he's been listening. But he was also wanting to get his boys out on the water. And so he was wondering of any kid friendly spots or any recommendations in the San Marcos area. So we talked about that. But that got me thinking about people that maybe haven't had their childhood growing up in the outdoors or have kind of gotten into it in their older years, a teenager or as an adult, and are wanting to get their kids more into the outdoors, whether it be fishing, hiking, camping. And I feel like that's kind of right up your alley with you being into marketing and stuff like that for REI. So what is your take on that? And do you have any, you know, things that you can recommend for people to do?
I mean, I would, first of all, I would say like, finding things that are accessible to you. Like, I think, being outside has a lot of, like that there are a lot of things that are outside. Like in the co-op, we sell bikes, we sell tennis shoes, we sell, you know, all these other things that like connect people outside. Mm-hmm. To be an outdoors person, you don't have to be a hiker. You don't have to be a mountain biker. You can be all those things and be, and you could just exist outside and be an outdoors person. So I would definitely create a narrative of like inclusion in that space, like letting them know, like whoever that person is that isn't used to being outside. We have people that I will tell you, we have people that work for REI that do not like camping. Like they mm-hmm. don't like hiking. They don't like doing these things, but they enjoy the idea of seeing people that look like them be outdoors.
I see.
One of the things to kind of like also to answer the second part of your question, I think getting them involved in a community that are doing the things that they like finding a community, like if they like cooking, do they have friends or are there friends or can you go with them into a space like that's outdoors and like, hey, we're going to like with somebody that's, let's make this dish that's, you know, it's easy to make in the house, but let's make it outdoors and see how easy it is to, or how hard it is to do, or, you know, things like that, making things a challenge. And I think kind of like thinking about where you were in that age bracket. So if it's a child, like, what made things cool to you as a child? Like, did you think that you were like a secret agent, you know, walking through the woods right. and things like that, you know, you got to sell it, like sell it how you would want.
I see. You know, so basically try to integrate something that you know that they enjoy already.
Yeah.
And integrate it into the outdoors. And that'll help create that same excitement and create a bridge from where their mentality is to bridge it over to the outdoors. That I never even thought about it that way. That's awesome. I might actually have to take some of that advice from my kids for sure.
I kid you not. Like the funniest thing I ever seen in my life. And this kind of like drives in that point. I was watching so when I was in this conference a couple months ago and it was just like taking black the outdoors. And the intro video that they played was a bit of their kid, like their adult children, like their teenage children, camping for the first time. And I have never seen something so funny, like people trying to figure out how to how do we start the fire? How do we get this thing to work? And then like, there was like one person in the group that knew how to do everything. So they were kind of like, they're like the lifeline of the group, and it was just so funny. Like, but the last day of their little group that they had this like kumbaya moment in front of a fire, and they were all laughing. and joking about how they, some of them might not ever go camping again, but some of them were like, okay, I could do this. You know, this is not as bad as I thought.
That's awesome. Have you ever heard of that show Snowflake Mountain?
Yes.
So that's what that kind of reminds me of. You ever heard of it, Jose?
No, never.
So it's a show, I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but it was on Netflix, and they take city, I guess they're teenagers, young adults, and that have always grown up in the city, that are just your stereotypical city, non-responsible, living off their rich parents, you know, people. And they think they're going to a retreat or something. And so they have their Gucci and Prada and Louis Vuitton bags and all their fancy clothes and everything. And they get dropped off on a mountain. And they are, it's pretty much, it's almost like an intervention for them. And they have to do like the simplest outdoors tasks. And it is hilarious to watch because it's very simple stuff, but they throw fits and they throw tantrums, and you know, it's a typical drama reality show, but it's hilarious to watch.
It's like Survivor meets The Simple Life.
Dude, I kind of want to watch it.
Dude, you should. It's hilarious.
It sounds hilarious. Sure.
Yeah, the premise is interesting. Yeah, I gotta see if it's still available. I would love to check that out.
That's funny, but that's kind of what you're talking about, Theo. Made me think of that show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, the second part to that question that I had was, I wanted to talk about my response to him, and it might be beneficial for some other people that have been trying to get their young ones into the outdoors, whether it be fishing, hiking, you know, kayaking, whatever the case may be. And what I told him is, I gave him a few spots that I know has easy access and that has brim mainly, because it's us as we get older that we're like, oh, I want to catch the bigger fish, or I want to catch the more exotic fish, or I want to catch the more rare fish. But when you're getting a young person into some activity, especially something outdoors, try to not go by what you think is cool, but what you think they would think is cool and interesting to them. Because if me and Jose were to say, okay, well, we have one trip that we can take, and it's going to be anywhere, and we want to catch something. Me and him are going to be like, oh, let's go catch a bonefish in Costa Rica, or a rooster fish in Mexico. Or like, we would pick something like that if we had one opportunity. But to a kid, they don't know all the technicalities of all that. They don't know what's rare, what's not rare. They just want to do something fun. And so basically what I told him is, I gave him some easy spots that have some aggressive brim in them that they can go out and catch, and I can guarantee if you take them out and they catch one bass compared to 50 brim that are the size of a silver dollar, they're going to take the 50 brim any day. So that's just another thing that I could recommend for anybody that's trying to get a young one out to, whether it be fishing or hiking, kayaking, anything like that. Like, you don't want to take them on a 5-mile hike to see this overlook that has this historical view, because they're not going to care about that. They just want to go out and enjoy some time with their parents on somebody that they look up to. So maybe take them on a smaller hike if it's for hiking, or if it's for camping, maybe just like a 1-day trip, or maybe a out in the backyard somewhere where they're still close to their comfort zone, and they're getting the experience of camping and sleeping in a tent and a sleeping bag and looking out and seeing the stars, but yet they're still close to home. For fishing, somewhere that, you know, maybe easy to get to with a bunch of small fish, that they're just going to have that a little bit of action. So that's one thing that I would recommend for anybody trying to get their young ones into activities outside.
I kind of really agree with you. I'm like very much kind of going back to like the financial terms of return of investment. Like, I have a nephew, and I just think about like, is he gonna vibe with the outdoors? He likes dinosaurs. So like, oh, all right, I have a foot in. And one of the things that I joked about, I got him a little small tent for Christmas, and like kind of like got him some little things to, you know, do about a backyard kind of camping situation with. That is probably like the most cheapest, like, but efficient way to figure out if your kid is going to vibe with you in the outdoors. Because honestly, whenever I was younger, I didn't want to be outdoors. I didn't want to be outside. Like, that was like, I joke and I'm dramatic. I'm like, man, that was peasant work. Like, cutting the grass. Like, I had very bad, you know, I was like, I don't want to do this, but like it, that doing it in your backyard, that gives you so much like more capability to like really build it up. Like you can really like I can imagine like if I had a child that really loved the outdoors, I would build like a, I would take some dirt and like build up a, like a little hiking area. And then I would maybe, you know, kind of like make it a thing, you know, and have like a little area where we can hike up a tent and we build it together so we can both feel accomplished. They can feel accomplished. And then, yeah, just, I think it's about the experience.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I remember some of my earliest times, like, I don't think I ever actually did like an actual overnight stay in a tent in the backyard, but they would put up a tent for me and like I would just hang out and I was like act like I'm camping, whatever. And you know, even then, even that was like really, really fun for me. And I think Russell nailed it on the head. Like just, you know, simple exposure, if there's something that they're not used to, would go a long way.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I don't know how popular, I know we have a lot of them come to our store, but getting them involved with Boy and Girl Scouts, I think that's like a really great way so that they can see not only like, you know, family, like you and your dad or you and your mom, but they can see people that their peers that are like doing these things that you're introducing them to, and they, you know, they find it cool, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, that's true. Like for me, like growing up, my family, like my immediate family, we didn't really go camping. I think my earliest camping experience was actually because a friend had invited me, and so I went with them. And because his family, like they went every year for like spring break, they would go during the summer and all that stuff. And so my family allowed me to go, and it's because of them, like I was kind of exposed to that. But I mean, like I loved it. I thought it was like the coolest thing because, you know, something that I wanted to do. Like I said, kind of going back to like the whole tent thing in the yard, like, it was something that I wanted to do for real, having had like that, my limited experience, but just never had the chance until my buddy invited me. And I mean, it just like kind of snowballed from there. Like I just loved it. And I looked forward like every single time, like they would have these trips to just go. And then eventually my own family and I, we would go on these trips, on like smaller camping trips and stuff. And so that was pretty neat too, like how all that kind of like progressed. And it all, you know, just started with a simple invitation. So yeah, I mean, community, like reaching out to people, getting to know people who are like involved in that space is also, I think, pretty, pretty important. If like your immediate family isn't already like involved.
See, I was on the other end of that to where, my family was pretty broke and we pretty much just had to go camping all the time, for anything fun we wanted to do. So, I lived in Arizona for 8 years when I was younger, and, we would go out to the middle of the desert or go to Lake Patagonia and stuff like that and go camping all the time. So that was something that we did quite often. So we would go out camping at Lake Patagonia and stuff like that quite often. And we lived on the edge of the desert. So during the day in the summertime, when we didn't have school, we'd go out and we'd be outside all the time as well. And so we would run into all sorts of wildlife, and it's kind of morbid, but we would catch wasps and ants and centipedes and tarantulas and put them all in these little containers and, you know, watch them fight to the death and stuff. But so I was introduced to a lot of stuff like that at a young age, just because that's what we did with our free time. But once again, it was close to home. It was something to where I wasn't out forced to be somewhere where I was in an uncomfortable space. Like if I wanted to go home, I would just go home, which was at the end of the block. You know, we would go to the end of the block to the sand dunes and stuff and do all that. So I think tying that back into to the point that I was making is, as long as it's comfortable for that child and something that they're used to, it's easier to introduce and kind of create a bridge to the new activity that you're trying to get them into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to kind of build up on that, like, I think it comes down to knowing like your kids' limitations. So like I'm to be fair, I'm not a parent, but I have nephews and nieces and you know, I've taken them fishing and stuff like that. And also just like general comments from people whom I've talked to who do have kids and stuff like that. Just from like my own observations, like knowing like the limitations of your kid, you know, like if they're not used to being outside and they get like really hot and stuff, like, or if they get hungry, like take snacks, keep them comfortable, because having like these negative associations with the outdoors probably isn't going to benefit them in the long run if that's something like you would hope that they end up finding themselves into. So it has to be like a positive experience, something that, you know, they're like, oh man, I had a good time. I want to keep having a good time and like try and do it that way. So like keep them comfortable, bring them snacks, water, whatever. You know, if they start like not really paying attention or like seeming like disinterested, you know, maybe like wrap it up and, you know, call it for the day. And because you don't want your kid to be like, yeah, like my dad took me hiking one time and I was tired. I wanted to go home, but we had to hike the whole 8-hour trip or whatever. And I was hot and hungry and I was like, that sounds miserable, you know, and the kid's probably going to remember that. So, you know, so like, you know your kid's limitations and keep them comfortable, keep them happy and all that stuff. Cause at the end of the day, it's just you guys spending time together and hopefully in a way that you guys continue to spend, you know, like that could be something that y'all could do later on in the future if they're not, you know, deterred by that. And so I think knowing like your limitation or their limitations is really important. And then kind of touching back on like his other question about like where to go and stuff like that. Was he like specifically referring to fishing, like wanting to go fishing or just like in general?
Yes. So he was talking about fishing in particular for his kids.
Okay. So in Texas, if you go to Texas Parks and Wildlife, they have an interactive map of different state parks and fit in like fishing within state parks is nice because you don't have to have a license. So he himself doesn't have a license, he can go and take the whole family, and that's something like they can do, they can engage in. And actually right now, Texas Parks and Wildlife. Texas Parks and Wildlife is celebrating 100 years of state parks. So right now is a good time to get out and about because a bunch of parks are having like little events and you can check their calendar and see what's going on, which is pretty neat. And so, you know, state parks are really good, but you know, there's a lot of like local fisheries that you can take them to, and kids don't need licenses, not till like 16, I think, but the parent, you know, obviously does. But you know, he could take them to some local spots. There's a bunch of local spots. And then when it comes to fishing, you know, again, like the bluegill is like the panfish are like unsung heroes. I'm pretty sure we all got our start catching those fish. Right. I know I did.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the funnest thing. Like all my nephews and nieces, when I took them fishing for the first time, that's what I took them to do. Cause I knew they could catch them, and I knew that they can catch a lot of them. Cause exactly. I think that's the other deterrent, like kids, they need to be like engaged, you know, they need to be engaged. And if they sit there
successful.
Yeah. They need to be engaged and feel like that success. And if they sit there staring at a bobber or whatever, waiting for something to happen, they're going to get bored. They're going to go do some other stuff and they're not going to be like as excited about it. So I think bluegill is like super accessible and they're a lot of fun. And not only that, but they're super pretty and it gives you a chance to kind of like teach them about it, show them like a different kind of appreciation. Not only like is it fun, but it can be an educational experience as well.
That's so funny. In my years of living in Texas, did not know that.
What was that?
I said in my years of living in Texas, I did not know that you could fish in the state parks.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks don't know that.
It's not a very well known rule, which is crazy. And I remember first time I ever heard about it was, I want to say maybe we were in high school, maybe we were getting our undergrad. And I was talking to Jose about free fishing weekend, and we talked about going fishing somewhere, and it happened to be a state park. And I brought up something about fishing license, and he's like, "Bro, you don't need a fishing license if you're at a state park." And I was like, "Wait, what?" And so it had to do something with free fishing weekend, state park, and license. And he said that, and I was like, "I had no clue." So I was 18, 19, 20 by the time I heard about it.
And the nice thing about going to a state park is, well, not all of them will offer fishing, right? But, you know, the ones that do, they also offer other things. Like there's often hiking trails. If they're into like wildlife and stuff like that, like there's a bunch of wildlife they can see. You can go birding and they have like some Some parks have bird blinds and stuff like that. And so, and I think, and that's what I was going to notice too. So like the other thing that you could do is if you notice like your kid is having like tendencies towards like one thing, like maybe they don't like hiking or whatever, or maybe, sorry, maybe they don't like camping, but they like hiking because, you know, they don't have to stay overnight, but they can still enjoy the beauty. Or maybe like while they're hiking, like they get really fascinated by like the bugs or the wildlife or whatever the case may be, the rocks. You can turn it into a game for them. Like you can get like a little guide and be like, okay, the first to find this, you know, gets a prize or whatever, you know, make it fun, make it engaging. And, you know, I think there's a lot of different ways that you can make it more approachable for kids, not even just for kids, but like for like people who are interested in the outdoors, but who maybe has not always been involved in the outdoors, you know, because I think especially like because of, you know, the vid, I think a lot of people have started exploring outside more. Like at least I know like the sale and fishing licenses were, you know, like they exploded. There was huge uptick. And I think a lot of people were starting to find their way outside who otherwise really didn't. And they just, you know, maybe didn't know where to start, especially if that's not something like their family was, you know, actively doing. So, you know, like I think just taking it slow and like slowly, like figuring out what it is that you like and maybe meeting other people to kind of like introduce you to those things and just dabbling. Like, I mean, there's just the outdoors just means getting outside. It doesn't have to tie it to any one specific thing. So, you know, as I think as long as you're getting out, having fun and like sharing those experiences with your kids or loved ones or friends or whatever, then I mean, I think that's a solid thing to be doing.
I will say, like, I don't know how accessible y'all are to REIs, but we have like classes that are like specifically made for kids and they have like classes that you can sign them up for. So like if they don't know how to ride a bike or if they're like getting, they need to be sized for, you know, for backpacks, we can do that kind of stuff in store, which is like a really exciting and fun experience. Those are like pre camping experiences that you can do to kind of like temper the floor on those activities, you know? So I think that that's something that you could do. Cause I think that can really navigate and help you decide like, oh, how much are they invested in this? Because if they're like not into it when they go into like a space like that, like an outdoor store or like things like that, then you can kind of already tell. But I think on the other side of that too is like, you know, one of the things that I saw in this, I was editing with a friend, they did a piece on getting inner city youth involved in the outdoors. And it was just such a hard thing to watch sometimes too, because I know that I wasn't raised and I was raised with like accessibility and like the knowledge of the outdoors, but these are like kids in New York and like Chicago and areas where there's like not much opportunity and accessibility to do it. But like, they had someone who looked like them that like brought them into those spaces, and like they would have music and things like that. They made it an event and it like an experience. And that's every awesome. Year, you know what I mean? Like they made it like kind of like a fun experience. And that's what I say that because like as a father or as a parent, like sometimes you can really make things really fun. Like you can learn how to engage outside of like what you're normally used to. Like you just like think of ways that you can maybe pretend to be like Tom Cruise or have a funny accent, you know, have a funny accent. If you have daughters, like, you know, talk to them and like, you know, if you have a son, like talk to them in a different accent or like things like that. You know, I think that that really, if they see that you're being a kid with them, like for my years, and I'm not a parent either, but like I think one of the things that like helped me at camp was to like be a kid, as much as I didn't want to do that, like it made them want to hear me. Like they were able to listen to and hear what I said because like I was like being just as funny and as like obnoxious as they were.
Right. It makes it a lot more relatable for them.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's an REI close to me. The only REI I've ever been to was with you, Jose. Where were we at? Were we in New Mexico?
Yes, we did stop. Yeah, we were in New Mexico. We were on the way back.
I love that REI. Fe. It's by the railroad.
Right there by the rail station. Yeah.
So we were waiting to eat at that little restaurant, little Mexican restaurant by the railroad station.
Yes.
And we were just like, well, we got time to kill. Yeah. We went there. Actually, it was for my birthday lunch, whatever. But we went to that. We wound up – there happened to be an REI that I saw. I was like, dude, let's go. So we went. I think it was my dad's first time going to an REI too. And it was pretty cool, man. I really love REI. I really do. And, you know, I always leave either having spent more than I should have or wanting to spend more than I could. But, I mean, there's always something at REI.
Right. I could definitely see how it would be a dangerous store to go into.
It's definitely a dangerous store to be inside of.
It's almost like going grocery shopping when you're hungry. You just want everything.
Oh, yeah. So speaking of kind of like in that space, so like gear, Theo, if someone wanted to get into camping or hiking this summer because, you know, it is National Great Outdoors Month and they wanted to try it or whatever, do you think, like, what would you recommend for someone just wanting to try, you know, getting into it?
Okay. So I would definitely, like, if I'm being honest, I would reach out to the people that are around you. If you do know someone who's in the industry or does the activity, I would be careful about the advice that you give for them, but like, see if they have any old gear. Like a backpack that is like, you know, resizable, like things like that, you know, kind of like, or maybe if they have a bike, you know, see if they have a bike that you can maybe take and get looked at, you know, things like that. So like, I would first start there. I really believe in sustainability, and making sure that you kind of use those resources first. If your audience is a member at a co-op store or REI co-op, there is a section that used to be called garage sale, but they rebranded it and now it's resupply. You can shop used gear, which is a really great thing because it helps keep, you know, old gear out of where in places where it doesn't belong or it's not being used. And, I would definitely, make sure that you get the things that are most important, like your sleeping gear, your like shoes. Obviously you need to make sure your feet are protected. And then, like your backpack, we need to know how you're going to store everything. And then just like sleeping in general, like your tent and your sleeping bag, like all those things that you need. And then the food. I would definitely like, as far as gear wise, like that's such a broad thing. I would definitely say like, you don't have to spend a lot of money to get into camping and hiking, but you when you're starting off, don't feel like you have to have like the best gear. I would definitely check out, I definitely have like some resources on my website that I'm going to be putting together. And then I also always point people to REI.com or go into a REI store. One of the things that I can say about even just from behind the scene at REI, especially back in the day, the people that worked at REI, they were definitely in the activity. They did the activity that they were telling you about, or they were like giving you advice for. It still kind of rings true today, but along with that, we have intensive training. We have to like know a lot about the brands that come through our stores and what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are. And so, you know, I would say like definitely if you can go into a store, REI definitely has the resource of talking to somebody online. There's Backcountry. Backcountry is a really great website to look at. There are a couple of influencers that I really enjoy that I definitely look into, you know, their reviews on products and things like that before I even spill a little bit of coin on a piece of gear. I'm going to, you know, kind of check out and see what they say. But I mean, overall, I would definitely, most of all, just see if you can find a way to be as resourceful as possible. You don't have to spend a lot of money and then go out and have fun.
So you're saying secondhand would probably be the best way to go for somebody that's a beginner.
Yeah, I think
save
yeah.
money and stuff like that, and sustainability, and just being as yeah. resourceful as you can.
There is nothing wrong with secondhand gear. Like literally at REI, like just a little nugget for y'all. Like I say, if you're looking for a pair of like hiking boots, you can get a good pair of hiking boots. One of the things, like somebody might have worn them twice and they were like, oh, these hurt my feet. They get marked down like 50%. So you really can get a great deal on hiking gear inside the store. Inside the store, it is final sale. But if you are purchasing it online, you get 30 days to exchange or return as a member. You know, and that's something that's like gonna really be influential, especially if you're like y'all sells, y'all don't have a lot of access to an REI. Mm-hmm. Obviously as a member, you do get with anything else, you get a full year to exchange or return. And that's great. But like with that, with resupply, it's such a great resource because you can buy like for kids, like it's not leaving a huge dent on your wallet to have to like buy hiking shoes. And if they don't like hiking, you haven't like wasted a bunch of money on a new pair of boots that they're not going to wear.
Right. Right. And the last thing yeah. you want to do is take them hiking unprepared, because that's going to make it less enjoyable for them.
Exactly.
So you can get something exactly. at a lower price and make exactly. them a little bit more comfortable. They might be more likely to enjoy it. So never exactly. thought about that aspect of it. So say you had a person come into REI and they have never been camping, but they want to go camping. If you had to point them the direction of five pieces of gear, what would be those five pieces of gear that you would recommend for the first time camper?
The most important pieces are obviously like your footwear. Like you want to make sure that you protect your feet outdoors. There's like, and that's going to vary between the terrain mm-hmm. and like how soon you're going to want to wear the shoes. And like what you're doing with the activity. I definitely would make sure footwear and clothing is kind of in the same bandwagon, like making sure that you have something that's like going to protect you need some protection or you need to be warm, like that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. I would definitely say sleeping system. Like for sure. If you don't have good sleep, you will become the terror in that, like that space. Like,
right, right.
Like, I guarantee you, if I don't get enough rest, like it's just going to be a terrible situation for everybody. So sleeping systems, like definitely a good tent. You probably want something breathable. I would say like it doesn't have to be ultra light for your first time, because that's how things get expensive. Mm-hmm. I would definitely say getting, if you're going to spend the money, I would spend it on your bed system. So like finding like a good sleeping bag or a sleeping quilt, you know, things like that. Deciding if you want to go synthetic or down. Mm-hmm. And then figuring out like what kind of like do you want like a air mattress? Cause you want something to put under that, you know, that sleeping bag. And then I would say this is like a really like different one. I always say, maybe Jose will like relate to this too, but like I will always recommend like squirrel nut butter, and it's for like chafing and like hot spots.
So that's more for a comfortability aspect if you're going to be hiking or active for sure.
Let me tell you, I will never discount how many people come back into our stores and they will come up to me and be like, I'm keeping everything that you told me, but like, I was like, I never would have thought about the needing that like material or like that product, but I'm glad that I got it because like at the end of the day, when like you're taking off boots or like you're hiking or running like a trail run, mm-hmm. you don't realize like how much you need those products and like how much you need that in a space. Yeah, like, I mean, obviously, the last thing that I would think about is food. Like, you want to make sure that you have, like, the ability to cook food. Right. Which kind of, like, navigates into the funny story of, like, the only time that we went camping as a family. So, my dad was in the military, and he really had this passion to really get me and my family outdoors, and my mom was not having it. She was just very much like, Pedro, I don't know what you're thinking, but this is not going to end well. And like by some grace of God, like he convinced her to like let us do like a family camping trip to Sealy, Texas. And I will never forget this trip because so my dad, we were thinking that he got like some food from like a camping store or like from Walmart or something like that. My dad got a dehydrator. And so we're on this late trip and my mother is like every bit of like angry militant person when she's hungry. Mm-hmm. And I spent the whole day outdoors, like we were hiking and like my dad was really hungry. So he like ate like all of the hot dogs that we had. So we didn't have any like wet food. So we opened up the food for the dinner and like we were just going to do like the dehydrated meals that he created. And he realized that all the food was like rancid.
Oh, no.
And can I tell you, I've never seen my mother so angry in my life. Like,
so y'all went from, okay, he ate all the hot dogs, so that kind of sucks. We're going to have to resort to dehydrated food to not having any food at all while she was already hungry after being outside all day.
And you could only eat peanut butter and oatmeal for only a couple of times.
Oh, my goodness. I can imagine your mom being like Michael Keegan Key from when the substitute teacher, y'all gonna feel my wrath. I can just imagine.
It was so funny. Like we would talk about it we talked about it like last Christmas. We were just like talking about, oh yeah, you remember the time when we went and spent time it was in Sealy, it was at Lady Lodge. We were like out there camping and like you just like you fumbled the bag. Yeah.
Sounds horrible.
Yeah.
I bet it's funny
person.
Looking back, but at the time, oh my goodness.
At the time, no, it was terrible. I've never been afraid of my mom so much. Like she was scary.
Has that ever happened to you, Russell?
Let me think. I don't think so because I have always had dehydrated food. What are those Mountain Man or whatever they are?
Yeah, Mountain Home
so
or something.
I always take those camping with me. Yeah, whatever they are.
By the way, I don't know if you know, but if you get those in certain if you get a certain amount of those from REI, they give you a discount.
Really? I did not know that.
Quick tip, y'all.
Fun fact. Yeah. Fun fact.
Yeah. But yeah, normally I have those just in case, because if I go camping, it's typically like deli meat and bread, and yeah. I'm going for the activity, not for the food, which I hope change. That's something that me and Jose have talked about, outdoor cooking. We're both kind of passionate about food, and we love food, and we love the outdoors.
Yeah, so that would not
over time, we want to integrate the two and hopefully maybe someday come up with a cookbook and be able to base it, base meals regionally on where you are. So wherever you would be able to harvest a certain kind of animal, certain type of herb and stuff like that, and make a meal outdoor cooking. But that's a whole nother episode on its own. So sometimes I do go for that. I'll go for whatever I can catch or find in the area, but
somebody has a knife.
Typically just, yeah. I mean, it's just sandwiches. And if for some reason something goes bad, I have those dehydrated meals. So
not just that is like the one part of me that like will never be domesticated and like be outside. Like I have to have food. Like it has to be like, when we went camping, I brought like ready to heat beans and rice and I cut up some sausage. Like there's just something about me. I think it maybe it's from that trip. You know, I got triggered. It's like PTSD.
Right. Dude, a campfire jambalaya, I bet, would be amazing, though.
Oh, it's amazing. It really is.
Where were you? Man, so my freshman year or sophomore year, I can't remember, but I was an undergrad. A buddy of mine had planned a camping trip. We're going to go fly fishing on the Guadalupe River for trout, and we're gonna camp out. I think it was for 2 nights, and we're like, yeah, man, we can keep a trout, we can cook it on the fire, all this and that, making these big plans and all that stuff. So we were vastly underprepared. So we got to camp, we realized we didn't even have firewood. I forgot to bring or like pack the firewood from home, so we had to drive to the gas station in New Braunfels, buy our firewood, and then we're like, oh shit, we don't even have food. Like, we don't have anything. So we went and we bought Pop-Tarts for breakfast. We bought hot dogs for lunch and dinner. And we bought some like buns, all that stuff, the basics. And then we bought like these hearty Campbell soups, like the canned ones. We each bought one. So the first night, we just had, I think it was the hot dogs for dinner. I think we bought like one pack of ham and some bread for sandwiches for lunch too. So the next morning, woke up, dipped into our Pop-Tarts, went fishing, got skunked, came back, had some lunch. We took a little siesta. We went back fishing and then we came back for dinner and we're trying to start this campfire so we can cook what remainder hot dogs we had. And then we didn't even have like a receptacle or anything, like a container to cook our soup in. So we just peeled the label. We're going to cook the soup in the can and just go from there. And so we needed to start this stupid fire. And so I had bought a fire striker and some cotton balls with like lathered in Vaseline. Right. And I kept trying to start this stupid fire. And the striker I had it had like this little rod with like a spring loaded rod, and you would put it at an angle and you would like push down on it. And dude, I was so dumb, man. You could tell like I had zero camping experience because I was trying to ignite this cotton ball on a wooden picnic table and then somehow transfer it to where it needed to go. So I have this cotton ball on the table and like I'm trying to light it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is how you can destroy forest fires.
Dude, I'm trying to light it and it finally like catches spark and it catches on fire and it goes. And it surprised me. I didn't realize how fast it was gonna happen. But because it was sticky with the Vaseline, it got stuck to the fire starter. So I like start waving it around and I launch it towards my buddy. And like this little flaming cotton ball goes towards my buddy. And my buddy's like, oh shit. I have never seen him move so fast in my life, dude. This guy booked it. We about died laughing for like 10 minutes. And I had to restart it. But thankfully this time I had the the wherewithal to do it by where we had the actual like firewood set up. So we started the stupid fire and we just roasted our hot dogs and ate our Campbell soup from cans. And that was like our last meal of the trip before we went back home. That was pretty miserable.
That's crazy.
That's
good,
a lot.
Good times, funny. Looking back, but damn.
Right, yeah, right.
Never since then.
You learned from it though, at least.
Oh hell yeah, I did. I'm not going to the woods without anything to eat like that, man. Come on.
So it's kind of hard to talk about gear generally. So that's kind of why I threw that five pieces of gear question at you. And even that could have varied depending on where you're at geographically, what season you're going hiking or camping in. It's hard to generalize when it comes to gear. But I guess you can try to generalize per activity on what kinds of gear. Like, for instance, you brought up sleeping mats, sleeping bags, or sleeping arrangements, tents, clothing, shoes, stuff like that. So, obviously protecting your body. So clothing, shoes and clothing.
Sunscreen.
Tents. Sunscreen. Or clothing that is UV resistant. Tents, sleeping arrangements, so on and so forth. And then food. So what are your thoughts on hammocks if somebody were to go out as a single person going on a small 1-2 day trip? What do you think about hammocks?
I feel like I'm about to do my Bob Barker message. Okay. And I don't know if Jose will like have anything to say about this, but I love accessible camping. I would just definitely make sure that it is allowed. Cause like a lot of times people don't check and see if it's allowed in the areas because it's like pretty damaging the trees whenever you use hammocks to like camp
them.
So like I mean that's something I would be aware of is like, you know, we want to take care of the lands that we have and, you know, be grateful for the spaces that we have. I will say with hammocks, so I have like it's like a double-edged sword. Like they're really easy to set up. They're really great resources for a single camping. But I would still stress on having like a traditional setup too, because like the thing is that even from an economical stance, like you're going to spend almost maybe even more on a hammock setup because you're gonna have to buy the tarp. You're gonna have to buy a sleeping bag. You're gonna have to buy all these other things. And the thing that people may not think about in that situation of you purchasing that stuff is that you're not going to be able to like keep certain gear to use with other gear. Like, I don't know if that makes sense. Like you're not like every once in a while, you'll need to buy a new tent. Every once in a while, you need to buy a new hammock. The products that these hammocks use are going to be for their systems. And so like, you're not going to be able to use those in other settings with other gear that you have unless it's like with that hammock. So that's something I would think about whenever you're deciding on like, do I want to invest a lot of money into hammock camping?
I see.
Yeah. And I would just like be aware. I would also be aware of the companies that you're purchasing from because, you know, obviously with REI, we do a little bit of research and, you know, we sell both Kamek and Eno. I'm a really big fan of Kamek because I know the guys personally, but I really love the product and like the stuff that they create. But the great thing about Kamek is that they have gear that you can use, like if you buy a sleeping bag through them or a quilt, you can use it in a regular tent too. It's going to be expensive. A lot of their stuff is really expensive.
I see. So basically what you're saying is you just have to pick one or the other and know what is going to be more beneficial for your situation.
Right.
That it's not going to be like, oh, I want to go cheap. Let's buy a hammock. Cause that's not the case. So you want to find something that's best suited just basically back to sleeping, you know, sleeping preparations for whatever your, you're going to be doing. So, okay. Well, that answers a question I had about that.
How long you're going to be camping, like things like that. Cause like you have to think about the fact, like if it rains, like you need to have some kind of protection because mm-hmm. most hammocks aren't waterproof. Mm-hmm. And so you're definitely going to feel, you know, feel the rain in that unless you, and you're open to a lot more than if you are in a tent. You have a little bit more privacy and separation from the elements.
Well, that answers all the questions that I had about gear. You got anything else to add, Jose?
The other thing that the other thing about hammocks is, like, because of the airflow, they can be pretty cold. Case in point with Russell, we were camping that one time. You're like, oh, dude, it feels so good. I'm gonna go sleep in the camping. I was like, all right, cool, man. I'll just sleep in the truck. Dude, you came back like 2 hours later freezing.
I was so
You got to get the underquilt.
Well, I was just sleeping. Like, so we stayed at a. Have you ever heard of Hip Camp?
Ever heard of what?
Hip Camp.
Yes.
So we stayed at a Hip Camp site up in the Ozark Mountains, just outside of Fayetteville, Arkansas. And we were going fishing. We went and saw Garth Brooks in Fayetteville, and then the next morning we're getting up to go fishing in Cotter, Arkansas, on the White River. So we were going to camp out because it was kind of a last minute thing. I had already had the tickets for Garth Brooks, but in terms of sleeping arrangements, I didn't really think that far ahead. And every hotel in Fayetteville or within a 1 hour to 2 hour radius of Fayetteville was booked because of the Garth Brooks concert. And then on top of that, any rooms that were available, they were asking no less than $380 a night for. So I was like, yeah, no. So I went and I tried to find anything else, and I found a Hip Camp site that we stayed at for, I think it was like $70. And I mean, it was awesome. Like they had indoor restrooms you could use. She made us cookies and left them on a picnic table for us when we got there. They had a hammock there, but we got back from the concert so late that I was like, I don't even want to set up a tent. Like we literally have to leave in 3 or 4 hours anyways to go fishing. So I was like, dude, I'll just sleep in the hammock. And he said he was gonna sleep in the truck, and it was brisk outside, but it wasn't cold, but it got cold. And it just, yeah, I mean, it was crazy. So, and that's one thing weird, because this was, what is that considered, Northwest Arkansas. And I mean, hot springs, it's similar. Like you'll have bipolar weather because our little mountains here, more like hills, but it's kind of mountainous. So you'll have a little bit of bipolar weather. But up there, it's like drastic change from one side of the mountain to the other. And it was just, it's crazy. The winds picked up and it just got frigid outside, but I mean, it worked out. We just ended up loading everything up and heading to go fishing, got there a little early anyways, but yeah. So you always want to be aware of the forecast, if you're going to decide to sleep in a hammock. And I didn't have a sleeping bag or a quilt of any sorts. It was literally just me. And I think I may have even been wearing shorts, and a short sleeve shirt laying in a hammock.
That's what I was going to get at too, is like, if you're in a situation like that, like that sleeping situation could also change with the, like the layers that you're wearing. Mm-hmm. Just making, even if it's like cold outside, you know, if you have good layers, you can really make things a lot more, you know.
Exactly.
Comfortable.
So you can kind of suit it more for your situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I learned that the hard way. So yeah. So
and you're off the ground too. There's a little physics in that too. Like you're off the ground, so the wind is gonna go.
Yeah. Right. It's not stopping the wind like a tent and rerouting it. You're suspended, so it's going in all directions of you. So
you were definitely
able to see how that makes a difference as well. So
yeah.
So we're kind of coming up on time. Are there any other points that you want to make, Theo?
Get outdoors, get outside. Like, I mean, it's a great time to be outside. Things are beautiful. It's going to be a nice summer.
Yes, it will. And I believe this episode will be aired on June 3rd. So it'll still be at the very beginning of National Great Outdoors Month. So get out there and do it.
Yep. Yeah, check your local parks website, see what kind of events they got going on. A lot of times they have kid stuff. You know, just check your resources, go out, have fun, tag us, send us your photos of you guys and your adventures. And if you are interested in seeing more of what Theo is about, we'll put his the links to his website and things, and you can kind of see what he's all about and potentially maybe run into him in an REI or something.
Right, right. And he seems like he's full of knowledge on anything you might want to be doing and involved with the outdoors. So, yeah,
we'll
put all his stuff out there. And if y'all want to reach out to him, then we'll have everything out in our description. Before we end this episode, though, I do want to cover a few things and thank some of our listeners. So we've had quite a few areas listen to our podcast so far. Kind of not what I expected. I mean, we've hit Arkansas, New York, Arizona, Texas, Florida, California, Missouri, Georgia, Colorado, Illinois, Arizona, Wisconsin, Colorado, Arkansas and Texas, obviously. And we've even had an international listener over in Germany. So we just want to take the time to thank everybody that's tuning in and listening. And we appreciate you guys listening. And if you have any feedback on it, whether it's positive, negative, if you have any subjects you want us to cover, feel free to reach out to us on any of our socials. You know, they're in the description. We also have a Linktree. You can look us up on Linktree Wildlife Outdoors. The link will also be listed in there. And, you know, we'd love to hear from you. And if you guys are out, you know, recreating, doing anything fun this summer, we'd love to see about it. And, you know, send us pictures, tag us in it, and we'd love to talk about it. So, we just appreciate everybody that's been listening so far, and we have a lot more episodes coming. So just want to say thank y'all.
Yeah, thank you guys. Seriously, this is something that Russell and I have been talking about doing for a long time. Finally got around to doing it. We still don't know what's going to happen or where it's going to go, but just the fact that, you know, a few of you guys are taking the time out of your days, out of your schedules to give us a listen means a lot. So we appreciate it. And, you know, hopefully, you stick around and see what more content we'll produce. And like you said, if you have anything positive, negative to say, we'd love to hear it. Any topics, any ideas, anything. We're just excited to have you guys join us along for this little adventure we're embarking on. So thank you.
We definitely are. And didn't you have one of your buddies reach out to us and ask some questions as well, Jose?
Yes. So my buddy Henry Moore. Reached out to us on Instagram, and this question is related more to fly fishing. So he had a fly fishing specific question. Let me go to the chat. So Henry Moore asked us, well, so give a little preface. He is fishing now, fly fishing with a 9-foot 5 weight. He's wanting to try and fish with streamers. And he asked if there was like a recommended starter pack, if you will, for warm water fly fishing. And so I already kind of answered, obviously you guys can't see it. So my answer to that question for streamers would be the Wooly Bugger and the Clouser Minnow. Like, I think those two flies, one, they're probably the most popular and ubiquitous flies in fly fishing. But two, you could probably catch like 98% of the fish that are out there just using those two flies. And the nice thing is they come in all short and all sorts of shapes, color, sizes. For 9-foot 5 weight specifically, I'd recommend something on the smaller side, like a size 8 or even a size 6, depending. Leader size is something you should probably take into consideration as well. So I'd probably go with like maybe a 4X to 3X depending on the size of the fly you're throwing. But yeah, I mean, I personally have Wooly Bugger's one of my favorites. It's one of the first streamers I really like threw, and I still keep them in my fly box or like my go-to. If everything else is failing, I'm throwing this because it just catches. I've caught trout, I've caught bass, I've caught all kinds of stuff. Like, I'm pretty sure if you tied it on a bigger hook for salt water, you can catch redfish and some other salty species on that thing. Like, it is just a crazy versatile little fly. And, the same for the Clouser. The Clousers, I mean, you can catch bass, you can catch panfish on the smaller sizes. You can catch all kinds of stuff with those. go to the salt, catch redfish, trout, snook, whatever. Like it is, there are those two for streamer fishing specifically. I don't think it gets much better than that personally. Like those will probably be my go-to for someone getting into it. Now you got to be careful when you're buying clouders. They tend to be at least commercially tied like a lot. I see them a lot in larger sizes with heavier eyes. Might be a little bit too much for a 5-weight. So if you can find them in like a size 6 or something, or like a small, like a dumbbell or a, sorry, bead chain eye or something lighter like that, you could probably do pretty well casting that with a 5-weight, I would think. If you tie flies, or if you know someone who ties flies, you have a bit more, I guess, leniency, because you can tie it specifically for your weight rod. So, but I would lean towards a smaller size, or at least a lighter size. So like bead chain, stuff like that. Maybe like a extra small or small, dumbbell lead eye, if that's what's available to you. But yeah, like I think those two are probably my recommendations for someone wanting to get started, like in the streamer fishing, warm water streamer fishing. What about you, Russ?
I agree with that. I personally do have a 5-weight that I use, and I'd say smaller flies for sure easier to cast, especially if you're just now getting into fly fishing. Definitely bead chain dumbbell eyes are going to be a lot heavier, a lot harder to cast, a lot harder to turn over. When you're fishing for more aggressive species like bass, it's really not going to matter too much in terms of presentation because they're an aggressive fish. If you make a little splash, it's probably not going to spook the fish as much. Smallmouth are a little different than largemouth. They're a little bit more spooky, but just something that you can actually get out there is going to be lighter on a 5-weight. So just keep that in mind for sure. And it also depends on what leader you're using, what line you're using. But that's definitely a good starting point is a woolly bugger or something of the sort. So
yeah,
that's definitely some good advice there. But we just want to thank you, Henry, for listening to the show and reaching out to us. And thank you for reaching out and thank you for listening.
Yeah. Oh, and also Russell mentioned line. Yeah. So line's a big thing too. They do make like streamer profiles streamer tapers and like more aggressive tapers for turning over larger flies and stuff like that. But that's pretty specialized. I'm assuming if you're getting into it, you probably have like a more general taper or like a trout taper line. So those can still work as long as you have like the right leader and you're, not throwing anything too heavy. But, you know, I guess we could talk more about specifics in another episode if there's enough interest in that. But again, like I'm not an expert. I just like to fish and get lucky on occasion, catch some. So take my advice with a grain of salt. But if anybody does have any other questions, we'd love to talk about them. We'd love to try and help you guys out, and we'd love to hear, you know, what you guys are more interested in. So please feel free to reach out to us if there's anything you want us to discuss. We'd love to hear it. Thank you.
For sure. And thank you again, Theo, for joining us. I feel like it was a good conversation. Got a lot of good material from you. It's a little long-winded episode, a little bit longer than our others. So we appreciate you sticking around with us and giving us all the information, man.
Yeah, thank you so much, Theo. We really do appreciate it. It was fun. We'll have to plan a trip for sure.
Hands maybe to Big Bend.
Anytime. Hey. Don't tip me with a good time.
Right. We need to make it happen. So thank y'all all for listening, and we'll catch y'all next time.
This has been Wildlife Outdoors. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Facebook at Wildlife Outdoors and on Instagram at wild.life.outdoors. Let's go live life on the wild side.